Then I heard a laugh at my side. My guide had played the same trick on me that I was going to try on the cricketers. On another occasion, I was brought to a village. When I arrived, I watched some men playing darts in the tavern, and soon one of them handed me a dart and asked me to try my luck. This was easy. My thought-guided missile cleanly found dead a center of the board, and after a pause I suddenly turned and left the place. Later my very abrupt departure from this place surprised me, and I have an idea that my invisible helper had detected suspicion in the minds of the lads of the village that they had been used in a little thought exercise, hence my evasive action. Next headline, guidance from birth. One of the many things that surprised me when I began to have sittings with experienced mediums, was the number of times I was told that my spirit teachers had been with me from birth and had guided my footsteps through life. They certainly knew all about me, and now my daughter in spirit tells me the same thing. The many incidents in life, especially during war service, which at the time I attributed to luck, or a narrow escape, later made a pattern that I had overlooked until it was brought to my notice. A month after the 1914 war started, I enlisted at the age of 17. Some said it was foolish, but this early enlistment caused me to visit countries that I would not have seen otherwise. First I visited the Aegean and the Greek Isles, then Upper Egypt, and lastly the Holy Land. Prior to going overseas, I joined the machine gun section of my unit and with pitying looks was told by my companions that I had joined the suicide club. We landed on the Gallipoli beaches, and it was rather significant that owing to casualties in our first advance, I was at once promoted from reserve machine gunner to full membership with all the amenities. However, after that and throughout the war, no one who was in my gun team at the time was a casualty by enemy action. Now recalling incidents that occurred during 4 years of war, there seemed to be some helpful influence at work. My first narrow escape was on the beach in Gallipoli. We had been relieved from the front line and I was sitting and talking with three companions near the water. A strange officer came up and tapped me on the shoulder and said that he wanted me to unload some officer kits from a lighter. I was very annoyed as I was tired, but I had to go. When I got back, I found that a shell had landed in the middle of my three companions and all were killed. Later, my gun was in position in a short front trench on Hill 60. I do not know why the colonel suddenly decided to have it put in the second line of trenches. But the next day the ground shook and we saw our former trench forming a high curtain of earth and dust in the air. It had been mined and there were no survivors. Many times my careless moments seemed to be watched. Once on a small outpost in the Sinai Desert, after being relieved from lookout at midnight, I strolled into our small rush hut where we had our meals. The desert that can be cold at night in the winter, and I looked for something to eat before turning in. There was a wine bottle on a shelf and I smelt it and was lifting it to have a drink of what I thought was rum, when a kind of dread entered my mind and stopped me. I walked to the door of the hut and in the moonlight, poured some of the liquor into the palm of my hand. It looked rather dark and I rubbed my palms together to warm the fluid and smelt again. It was iodine. The cold had deadened my sense of smell and I had only caught the spirituous tang of iodine. Later, after a bout of jaundice, I was sent to convalesce at a small palace near Cairo. There was a boat for our use and one day, landing with a companion after a strenuous row against the Nile current, it was rather strange that we should be told that the doctor had unexpectedly called and was impatiently waiting to see us. Running upstairs to see him, he told me that my heart needed rest and further convalescence at Luxor. Luxor is on the Upper Nile about 400 miles from Cairo and I was told that it was a haven for pampered troops. It was all of this, and rather more to me as it is the world's largest collection of ancient temples and tombs. From my room in the Winter Palace Hotel facing the Nile I could see, far beyond the river, the Colossi, and more distant, in the shimmering haze, the hills with the temples cut into the rock face. I went to the temples and tombs of Luxor, Karnak and Thebes and was impressed by this ancient civilization and the strange beliefs and inscriptions. I thought that I would have to miss Thebes and the tombs of the queens. It is 7 miles by donkey, and as a new convalescent, I was barred from such a journey. However, a friend whispered that when the party assembled for the ferry, somebody would not answer to his name, and that somebody else would answer in his place, and that it would be worth seeing, so I took the hint. During the course of the war, my unit gradually advanced through Sinai and then into Palestine, and the names of places that once fell on inattentive ears during scripture lessons at school, brought a new interest. At one time we had our gun beneath the walls of Saladin's castle on the hill at Majdal Yaba. From the battlements we could see across the plain another castle, said to have been built by Richard the Crusader. Once when bathing at Gaza I was carried out to sea by a strong current. I tried my fastest stroke but made no headway. There were no boats as it was the seaward flank of the two armies and within sight of the enemy. There was nothing I could do about it, so I floated and rested. I was surprised at my own calmness during the situation. When I was a considerable distance out, I found that I was free of the current and could make headway parallel with the shore. I then swam in a long slant and landed further down the coast behind our lines. Once when out of the front line and sitting in my bivouac, I was interested in some long columns of troops going past. During one of their frequent halts I thought that I would go and speak to some of them. I found that they were divisional troops from India. I had an acquaintance in a regiment that had gone to India, and when I made inquiries, I found him standing a dozen yards away. Quite a coincidence, I thought, especially as this division and its various units and transport stretched for 15 miles. On another occasion in Alexandria, my attention seemed drawn to a soldier who had his back to me. When I walked round and saw his face, I found that it was my cousin. Next headline: My Quest of Truth and an Answer. My travels in Egypt and Palestine gave me much food for thought in later years when studying different religions and psychic science. The immense and impressive masonry of the self-styled mighty rulers of Upper Egypt and all the realms, etc., contrasted strangely to the country of the man who left nothing and whose kingdom was not of this world. I am not a religionist and I have never voluntarily attended an Orthodox church service, so my study of different beliefs was in the nature of a sincere quest for truth. I was sitting at my desk in my shop parlor and keeping an eye on my shop, when I sensed a spirit presence. I knew the feeling as I had it many times before, but this was different. Instead of being confined to the head and mentality, it gradually enveloped my whole body. It seemed as if a ray or power held me to the chair, with a fullness of heart, as if all the more tender moments in my life had been gathered together. I heard a voice say, "Whom do men say that I am?" Then tremendously vividly and in a matter-of-fact way it was impressed on my mentality that Jesus was in charge of the world. I was uplifted and seemed to know everything. There was no need to think, my thinking was done for me. I was not conscious of my chair and was comfortable and contented in something that surrounded me. No need to bother about my shop, I knew there would be no interruption. I wanted this spiritual power to stay, but gradually it withdrew and I mentally sent a simple thought of thanks and blessing. As I sat at my untidy desk, which for a while had become a sanctuary, I felt excited over the import of this experience and the wisdom in which such a great deal had been explained in such a simple way. The words quoted in the style of James first period was simply to draw my attention to the circumstances connected with their appearance in our Bible. The second part of the message, "In Charge of the World," was a simple modern thought, and given for me, a sincere seeker. There was no vague theological mistiness about it and it simply meant just what was given. I got up from my chair and went to the shop door. It was a sunny afternoon and shoppers were passing, yet as I expected, no customer had entered to interrupt my communion. I wondered what my teacher and guide, the Chinaman, thought of the teaching of the Nazarene, as I do not suppose he heard much about it when on earth. About a year later, I got an answer in a strange way. I was one of a group attending a demonstration of psychic painting, done whilst the medium is controlled by a spirit artist. As she finished a painting for me, which was a portrait of a Chinaman, she said, "This is a guide and I am impressed to do this," and she painted a cross in the corner of the picture. During the early part of the Second World War, my projections continued for a time, and I then had my second most outstanding experience out of the body. Projected during the night, I was taken to a group of young British soldiers who had just passed over. As is often the case with young and healthy people whose passing was not preceded by a long weakening illness, they had become conscious almost at once. They were standing in the bewildered group and just staring around. Some were looking at their equipment, which was in pieces and scattered about, and they seemed to recollect that they had some connection with it, but the spirit mind was too shocked at this stage to bring understanding. One young soldier nearest to me was staring at the kit at his feet. The belt, shoulder straps and valise were separated, and as they had not altered much since the First World War, I said to him, "Let me help you, I was a soldier." As I was kneeling and buckling the parts together, I happened to look towards the group and was surprised to see a figure standing in their midst who was head and shoulders taller than the rest. I knew it was Jesus, although he was unlike any of the earthly pictures I know of him. To my surprise, they took no notice of him. He was looking at me and I felt uncouth as I realized that I was staring intently, but I thought that he would not mind, and I must see him. His gaze was steady and serious, and he said, "I have been with them all the time." I thought I ought to have known that, and realized how puny were my own efforts to help. There was a pause as I continued to stare, and then I began to be drawn away. I wanted to stay a little longer, but this earnest desire had no effect. I kept my consciousness on my journey back to my physical body and then halted and paused impatiently to reanimate it. I did not passively wait to see any spiritual symbol on the ceiling. I had got my treasure, and as soon as I was able to move, stretched my arm and found the light switch. Somehow I felt that I wanted to fully contemplate with my physical mind, and then share it with all. However, I am afraid that sharing with all was at the time whittled down to telling a few of my intimates who had had spiritual experiences and would understand. Since this experience, I have seen a photographic reproduction of a painting which I thought was a good likeness of Jesus as I saw him. It is by a Swedish lady, Bertha Valerius, and was executed with spiritual guidance and inspiration. It was finished by the end of the last century, and I understand the original is in a private chapel in Stockholm. Many paintings of Jesus show him as having dark hair. To me, his hair and beard appeared to be a mid-brown, the beard being slight. I did not notice the color of his eyes. He was wearing a white gown, like many of the Arabs and Egyptians I saw during my war service. I am very thankful for what has been given me and the doors that have opened in my simple seeking for truth. If I liken my progress of spiritual knowledge to swimming an ocean, I believe that I have now made a start and have wetted my toes on the edge of that ocean. Epilogue. I once saw the robed figure of an advanced spirit on a lower plane. The robe was not a spirit robe, but he had assumed his earthly appearance and clothing while teaching in this lower state. He had a small group of modern spirits round him who sensed that he was different from themselves, and one of them, who was curious about this, said, "You were born before our time, old man, weren't you?" He replied, "I was born before the pharaohs." Next headline, appendix, some aspects of astral projection. By Dr. Carl E. Miller. What is astral projection? Man has often been defined as a spirit clad in a material body. This is quite true if the word spirit is understood in a wider sense than usual. In the past, the concept of spirit referred to the highest spiritual principle, entirely different from matter, and consequently not capable of influencing matter. This notion has not only brought about innumerable difficulties in the field of philosophy, but has also made it difficult to accept psychic phenomena and especially the spirit hypothesis. In fact, man is not only a spirit with a body but a complex structure, comprising intermediate parts capable of bridging the gap between matter and spirit. Perhaps soul was originally meant to denominate these intermediate parts, but for lack of accurate knowledge, soul gradually became equivalent to spirit. When growing up, we learn to understand our material body as a part of the surrounding material world. Our soul is known to everyone by means of sensations, emotions and thoughts connected with the eye in the field of consciousness. The most important link between the two is the subtle body, or fluidic body, or perispirit, also called the double because to the eye of a clairvoyant it is a close copy of the material body. During our daily life, this subtle body is confined within the material body and is roughly coincident with it. Its existence becomes evident only if it is separated from the material body, and this separation takes various forms, as sleep, coma, apparitions, mostly unconscious, and furthermore astral projection, also called ESP projection, or astral travel, which in their fully fledged form are conscious experiences. The person projected is called the agent or projectionist. When fully projected, the agent is in a condition similar to the spirit of a dead person. Indeed, some persons who appeared to have died, but later came back to life again and were able to remember what had happened, told of their experiences in much the same way as an agent projecting during the sleep state. For further general remarks, the reader is referred to the introduction of this book. Obviously, astral projection presents an important link in the chain of facts constituting the proof of survival, and it has been recognized as such by some investigators, especially by Duprell, by Matteson, and more recently by Professor Hornellhart. Next headline, from my own field of observation. I am not a projectionist, but as a boy I had several experiences which evidently were the beginnings of projection. After going to bed and for no special reason, I suddenly felt myself floating in a horizontal position some 2 feet above and some 2 feet to the side of the bed. This was accompanied by a most agreeable sensation, and I was able to move forwards and backwards by moving my hands accordingly, as if swimming on my back in water. I felt my arms close to my body and was able to float higher or lower, but always for small distances of only a few feet, as it did not occur to me to wish to go longer distances. This happened on several evenings and then stopped. When I realized that I had not had this experience for a while, I wished to repeat it, but could not. A year ago I had another such minor experience. Lying in bed on my left side, gradually coming out of sleep, I suddenly heard the regular breath as if somebody were just lying behind me. Thinking this is impossible, I assured myself that nobody was there. On dozing off again, I had the same experience a second time, and again it was so vivid that I had to make sure that I was quite alone. I explain this by assuming a partial exteriorization out of the front of my material body and thus hearing my own breath behind me. Trifling as this may seem, it is important to me because it tallies with other accounts. If fully fledged projection is a fact, we must expect to find experiences of beginnings and of intermediate stages. Apparently, it is possible to be conscious during a projection without remembering it afterwards. I have been told by several acquaintances who have conscious astral projections and remember that they met me during a projection in the night, when I seemed to them wide awake as we conversed together, but I had no recollection of it in the waking state. On one such occasion, I had been seen clad in a particular suit of pajamas which I actually wore on that night. Many years ago, I was well acquainted with a natural psychic, a Mr. W., who had witnessed a variety of phenomena such as hauntings, symbolic dreams, astral traveling, clairvoyance, automatic writing in a foreign language, and miraculous healing of himself. One evening he found himself standing outside his bed in the room and looking at his body lying in bed. This being the first exteriorization he had, he thought he was dead, and the shock forced him immediately back into his material body, as all stronger emotions do. This is a very typical beginner's case of the spontaneous variety. To cite another example, a lady whom I had known for some years asked me to help her understand the following incident. She had been lying on a couch in daytime when she suddenly found herself floating around the room near the ceiling and chandelier and seeing her body lying on the couch. As she had psychic gifts, this was clearly the beginning of projections. In his astral travels, Mr. W. often visited distant countries and unknown cities. As he never read about psychic matters, he had a vocabulary all of his own and called such experiences sharp dreams to distinguish them from common dreams. This name stresses the clear-cut precision of the scenery observed, the sharpness of detail and the vivid impression of reality usually reported in this connection. He always tried to get material proof of his excursions but never succeeded in bringing home any object. Once he followed a man in the street of a foreign town and, wishing to ask him the name of the town, he touched the man on the shoulder. The man turned around and looked aghast. Apparently he had felt the touch but could not see anybody. On another occasion he put a similar question to a lady without touching her. She looked towards him and cried out, as she evidently heard his voice, but seeing nobody or perhaps his apparition, was terrified. To the persons involved, these seemed to be hauntings. Some projectionists relate observations difficult to explain. One of my acquaintances, Mr. Ed, had various psychic experiences. Once he was lying on a couch reading a paper. Feeling drowsy, he put the paper away and suddenly soared through the room, first in a horizontal position. Looking at his body, he saw it rise to a sitting position and then lay down again. The projection continued. He floated into the kitchen and came back still conscious to reunite with his material body. On another occasion, Mr. Ed, walking in the street, felt somebody overtaking him from behind and turning his head aside, saw his double walking beside him in a blue coat. As he looked at it intently, it disappeared. A person's first projection often seems to begin with feeling a spiraling motion. A. J. Davis, the seer, also reports this. A sensitive lady, Mrs. Z, with whom I am acquainted, had it too. When sitting quietly and relaxed, she fell into a trance-like state, in which she felt herself soaring upwards in a circling, spiraling motion, as if coming out of a big chimney. Then she felt herself floating over foreign countries as if flying in an aeroplane. She reached a faraway land which she had an idea was Burma, had a bird's eye view of the fields, saw people wearing big round hats working there, then a temple of Chinese design. She entered into it through an opening at the top and could see people down below worshipping. She then lost consciousness. This is a typical example of astral traveling on the earth plane. Through a medium I asked a spirit friend about this spiraling separation and he explained it as an effect felt by beginners because their various vibrations are not yet balanced. This is not far from Muldoon's theory to be mentioned further on. However, there are also whirls in the spirit world, which are likened to storms on Earth and are thus something outside the individual. Another projectionist among my acquaintances, Mrs. Yu, has experienced such whirls. It is a very disagreeable sensation, but it seems that spirit helpers give protection. Ram makes similar statements. Sometimes a projection produces after effects which constitute an argument against the theory that a projection might be but a clairvoyant experience. I have known a man, Mr. H., a public official who was very much attached to his mother, and very grief-stricken when she passed over. He wished and prayed insistently to meet her somehow, though he had but vague ideas of such a possibility and had not hitherto had any psychic experiences. Lying on his bed one afternoon, wishing to see his mother, he experienced a spontaneous projection, found himself walking towards a house in the spirit world and somehow knew that his mother was living there. Not finding her in the house, he saw her in the garden. He went to her and after a short conversation she told him he had to go back and that this visit could not be repeated. After coming back into his body he had a sickly feeling as if his stomach was upset, a condition which lasted for half an hour. I believe, he would not have seen the fulfillment of his wish if spirit help had not been forthcoming, even if unknown to him. Next headline, a parallel to Mr. Sculthorpe's case. for several years Mrs. Yu, whom I have known all a long time, has had many interesting projections. These were a consequence of her undertaking meditation exercises very earnestly. Thus her projections are a result of her spiritual development, and her case may also be likened to that of Ram as well as to that of Mr. Sculthorpe. When her first exteriorization occurred, she was lifted out and above her material body by spirit helpers whom she saw clairvoyantly. This experience was rather painful to her and therefore did not last long. Subsequent projections were not painful anymore. As a rule, she leaves her body sideways without perceiving outside help. When returning, she is usually conscious of re-entering her body again, but when projecting, she often finds herself outside her body without having observed the process of separation. Although she could see her physical body lying in bed, she did not see the silver cord connecting her subtle body with the material body. After discussing this with me, she asked her spirit helpers to show her the cord, and one night she was led into a neighboring flat where three people live. Their doubles were standing in their bedrooms and she could see their cords connecting them with their material bodies. Among other details, she noticed the coloring of the cord to be different with each person. After I had met Mr. Sculthorpe, we discussed the possibility of experiments and I suggested he should meet Mrs. Yu, while both were in the projected state. When consulting spirit friends through a medium, we were told that this was not as easy as it might appear, because conditions had to be right and vibrations would have to be equalized. Therefore, the only result of this idea was the following incident. On October 14, 1957, Mr. Sculthorpe wrote in a letter from London, "I have made a note of the following experience in case it may have been an experiment by our spirit friends and the lady may have been Mrs. Yu. Unfortunately, I was not fully conscious of the state and therefore did not particularly note the person's features." On the 15th September, Sunday afternoon at 3:15 p.m. I was projected and found myself in a room watching a lady, who appeared to be walking up and down and rehearsing the lines of a play. Another lady was sitting at a table reading the script and answering at times. It apparently was an experiment. Mrs. Yu confirmed that at the date and the time mentioned, she had been sitting in Zurich, Switzerland, at a table with a book on Buddha, discussing some details with a lady friend who has the habit of pacing up and down the room when discussing something. Though there was no rehearsing of a play, the scene was correctly observed. During her excursions, Mrs. Yu has never been exposed to direct attacks by ill-intentioned spirits. But when returning from a projection, she has more than once found her material body occupied by another spirit. She then entered the body from one side and the intruder had to leave by the other side. No disagreeable after effects were experienced. I wish to emphasize my firm conviction that a projectionist is no more in danger of an obsession than anyone else. While on an excursion, Mrs. Yu once felt the pull of the cord. She also felt, without seeing anything, the presence of a spirit helper who gave her power at times when she felt like fainting. When projected into the spirit world, she has seen spirits and spoken to them, some of them unknown and some known to her, as friends and relatives who had died. In the projected state, she is able to pass through walls and closed doors, but at first she felt a slight resistance when doing so. Here is another interesting experience Mrs. Yu had. While walking on the pavement of a busy street, she suddenly lost consciousness, and on coming to herself again, she found that she had continued to walk for at least some 25 yards while unconscious. 2 years later, walking along the same stretch, she felt a peculiar sensation on the same spot but pulled herself together. In her opinion, if she had let herself go, the same experience would have happened again. I have mentioned the above because such occurrences do not seem to be rare. Two correspondents have made similar statements. Also a personal acquaintance, Mrs. P. Some years ago, on two occasions, whilst walking in the street, felt herself outside her body and saw it walking at her side. This experience lasted for some 20 yards. Being afraid of becoming insane, she made an effort of will against it happening again. At that time she had no knowledge of psychic facts. I have come into contact with a number of people having had out-of-the-body experiences in a variety of forms up to fully fledged projections.